Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
Hi, I'm Scott Hahn, and I'd like to invite you personally to join me and Breadbox Media on August 24th in New Oxford, Pennsylvania, for a day of spiritual renewal. I'll be presenting three talks, one on St. Joseph, one on the sacrament of matrimony, and another one on the Holy Eucharist. Learn more and register at breadboxmedia.com/PA conference. I hope to see you there.
Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
Here we are. Here we are, and here it comes. Welcome to BTS.
Woohoo!
BTS Lowell, 980 WCAP Radio. Welcome again to Beneath the Surface. We're here until 11 p.m. Glad you could join us, because we like to be joined by you. Here at WCAP, where everybody gets it, we're here Monday nights, 10 to 11 p.m., along with you. So fasten your seatbelts, and let's go beneath the surface together. Bringing a little sanity into our age of insanity, a little life into our culture of death. Had to get that tagline in there, Bob.
Yes, you must.
Something I try to get in at the beginning of every Beneath the Surface show. Just to
say it again, Paul.
It is bringing a little sanity into our age of insanity, a little life into our culture of death.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and it's poetic too.
It is.
Yes. Thanks for filling time, Bob. If I wanted two-word answers, I could talk to the wall.
Well, I mean, we are trying to bring sanity in this show here, this topic.
All right,
topic
you're trying too hard now. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. 978-454-4980 is our phone number on this freezing tundra, Siberian desert-like night in the middle of February. So tonight, my fellow truth seekers, we go beneath the surface on the question of toleration. When is tolerance intolerable? And why is it that those who preach tolerance are the most intolerant among us? We're going to talk about the limits of tolerance. When is it ever appropriate to be intolerant? What does it mean to be intolerant? And to what we should be intolerant to? And to join me in that venture is you, as well as my guest right in front of my face, Mr. Bobbert LeBlanc.
Hey, oh, you're using Bobbert here. I don't think you've ever... Have you used Bobbert before here on
the show? I don't know if they know you by Bobbert.
Yeah.
I don't know. See, I thought Robert was too formal, Bob was too informal, so it was...
You compromised.
Not, actually, not too informal, too. Bob was too regular.
You compromised. I wonder if I should tolerate this, that's a good question. Compromise.
Because you have, for the past couple of years, been tolerating my nickname for you.
Right.
Whereas Cindy behind the glass has no such toleration for me. Isn't that right, Cindy, when I gave you a nickname?
I think you just said the intolerable name.
I think after getting like maybe 5 or 10 nicknames over the years, I've been like, just stick to one.
Ah, so you have been tolerant over the years, but now you're becoming more intolerant to other nicknames. It's like, just get one down.
Just get one down and use it.
Gotcha. All right, 978-454-4980. About to start the show. All the nonsensical yakking out of the way. 8 minutes past the hour of 10. On your mark, get set. Get your shovel, Mr. Bob. Bert. All right, let's talk about this this topic of intolerance.
Are we gonna start off by staking a position here?
You can. Why don't you stake away? I'll just sit here and listen.
Oh well, I don't think I'm gonna just say too much, but I'm gonna say that I am intolerant.
You're an intolerant man, are you?
I am.
Okay,
and I'm also a tolerant man.
Ooh, so you're not just one or the other; you happen to be both.
Yeah, I think without contradicting myself, yes, I think I can say that.
So this must mean, Mr. Bob, that you are tolerant on some things and intolerant on other things.
Yes.
Generally speaking.
That is true, yeah.
So let's talk about these things that we... Oh, by the way, before we get to talk about the categories here, about what to be tolerant and intolerant about, it has to be said at the beginning that tolerance is one of the sacred buzzwords of the religion of progressivism today, don't you think?
Yes, I agree. You see it so often that you're right. It's the buzzword. It actually, I think it's probably one of their principal virtues. I'm saying virtue in quotes here because I don't really think it's a virtue, but
yeah, it seems to me that it's sort of as I wrote on my Facebook page, and that I guess is what inspired you to suggest that we do this show. That's the religion of the left, which is basically progressivism, seems to have substituted or replaced love for tolerance, and the basic foundational moral precepts of contemporary leftism seems to be tolerate your neighbor as yourself.
I think they go further than that.
Okay.
I think they will suggest that there's certain moral deviations that we should tolerate as well. Not only tolerating these various people, but actually tolerating deviation, especially in sexual morality or related to that.
All right, let's step back a little bit and talk about the three sort of categories, I suppose you could say, that we're dealing with here when it comes to toleration, and that is people, acts, and ideas. This reminds me of an old saying. It goes like this. Small minds discuss people, average minds discuss events, and great minds discuss ideas. Do you remember that one?
No, I don't. I don't think I've ever heard that before.
Oh, that's a great one. It's a good bumper sticker size.
Yeah,
saying.
Who originated this?
I don't remember. This one wasn't me. Can't take credit for it, but I think it's really cool. But anyway, those are the three categories of tolerance: people, acts or behaviors, and ideas or movements, which is basically a collective idea that continues through time. Now, would you say, Bob, that we ought to tolerate some of those, or one or two of those things, or how does that work with you?
Well, I think I use two categories, but the two categories... The acts and the ideas, they overlap in my mind.
Okay, so you'll sort of put those two together into one.
So, but persons, yes,
yeah.
Or human beings, yeah. Same thing here. those are what I see that there should be tolerance for.
We should tolerate people.
We should tolerate people. Yeah, for the sake of love, actually, I think. The common phrase that we use, or Christians use these days, I think it comes from St. Augustine, you know, love the sinner, hate the sin.
Okay.
And I think that that's really where the word tolerance gets separated. You want to tolerate the sinner, meaning that you don't want to get rid of the sinner. Or
yeah.
If the sinner is doing something wrong, him as a person or her as a person, you would tolerate. But the actual act of the sin, you would have intolerance for. And I would like to say it in this sense, because I think a lot of people are going, what, you're going to send everybody to sin who sins out to the gulag or something like that? That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that whatever they do that is wrong, as a bare minimum, you would say this is wrong. You wouldn't excuse it and say, nah, it's not really wrong.
Right,
you know?
Right. So you wouldn't condone it. You wouldn't cooperate in it.
Right, yeah, right. Okay. And
so let me get...
Okay, go ahead.
Let me get this straight. You're saying that we should tolerate our neighbor for the sake of love.
Yeah.
And that would include not tolerating their bad acts or behaviors.
Right.
Now, let me see. This is where I think people today have a disconnect.
Right.
A lot would say that if you tolerate your neighbor, you should tolerate what they do. Because who are you to judge? And you should just support people because people have a hard time in life and they need your support. So don't be a jerk. But what you're saying, and this is the traditional, more traditional way of understanding toleration, is that toleration, first of all, is at the service of love. And second of all, it can't be at the service of love if you are tolerating your friend or your loved one's bad activity.
Right.
Do I have that right?
Yes, I think you're right. We also have, in the Christian tradition, you know, corporal and spiritual acts of mercy. And included in those is to admonish the sinner. And I think that is actually probably the thing that people have most difficulty with today.
Yeah, because today you either love the sinner and love the sin, which is the left, or you hate the sinner and hate the sin, which is the characterization of people on the far right. So you have those two extremes, love the sinner and love the sin, or hate the sinner and hate the sin. People can't distinguish between the sinner and the sin or the person and his behavior, can they?
Well, I think there is a certain amount of truth on the right as far as hating the sinner, hating the sin kind of thing. I'm not saying that it's all over the place.
What do you mean there's a certain kind of truth to that?
Because I've witnessed it.
It happens?
It happens.
Okay, yes.
It happens.
So both of these extremes you have experience with,
yes,
with people. Okay.
You see it. I mean, I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying I've seen it.
Right. Right.
And that truly is a terrible thing to. I guess a good story from the Bible would be the adulteress in the Gospel of John.
Perfect.
Who is about to be stoned, and they're asking, you know, Jesus, should we stone this woman? And Jesus goes, he who's without sin, cast the first stone.
Right.
And some people take it as Jesus is just, you know, saying, well, it's not really a bad sin or something like that. But really, what he's offering is mercy. What the Pharisees and everybody who wanted to stone the woman, they were looking for justice,
right,
you know,
right,
and so there's
but by the way, notice at the end of that scene, Jesus says to the woman, woman, did nobody condemn you? And she said, no, sir. And then Jesus says, therefore, I do not condemn you also. However, go and sin no more.
Exactly.
Now Jesus doesn't excuse the sin whatsoever. He forgives it because she's obviously repentant.
Yeah.
And he says, just like every good confessor says at the end of confession, or at least implies it, go and sin no more. Don't repeat this.
Right.
Or at least give it, you know, 100%.
Right. And, well, the reason why I brought that story up is that you had all these people with a kind of a bloodlust. They wanted to see that adulteress punished.
Yes. There is something primal in the human being that seeks vengeance and bloodlust for those who have done evil.
Right. Except for themselves,
yeah.
Then they are crying for mercy.
Absolutely.
They understand mercy so much at that point in time.
But for other people, no way, Jose. 978-454-4980 is our phone number here at BTS Radio if you want to get involved in our conversation about intolerance. 978-454-4980. So then... we have, I guess, the two sides carved out here of love, which is justice and mercy, which give birth to truth on the one hand and compassion on the other.
Right.
Or commandments and forgiveness. I mean, you can go all the way down the line. We know what justice is and we know what mercy is. Both the human heart seeks, particularly the heart that is not hardened has a zeal for justice, don't they?
Yeah, I think,
I don't mean punishment, I don't mean vengeance, I mean just rightness, right order.
Yeah, I think Chesterton says, and I'm not going to give an exact quote, but children, they seem to thirst for justice.
Yes.
That what they see things that are wrong and they say, that's not right that this happens or something.
The first moral thing that human beings say in their lives, usually, are three words. That's not fair.
Right. And you can imagine any child saying that. They have an instinctive understanding of justice.
Of justice, yes. Ah, that's what I thought she was looking at me for. There's the music. We need to take our first break right in between Justice and Mercy. And we're going to get to some more intolerant talk here at WCAP. I'm Paul Marano, your host. My guest tonight is Mr. Robert LeBlanc, not to be confused with the other Bob LeBlanc that hangs around at WCAP now and then. Cindy's behind the glass, and all of us will be back with you right after this. Don't go away. Good to be back, and glad you are back. You're listening to Beneath the Surface, WCAP Radio 980. My guest, Mr. Bob LeBlanc, talking about the topic of intolerance as well as tolerance. What does it mean? When do we give it, if it is something to give? So, Bob, before the break, we had mentioned that tolerance or toleration, which word do you like better?
Tolerance, I guess.
Okay. All right. They both mean the same thing?
One is, I think, a different part of the language. Toleration, I think, would be a noun, nounish.
Okay.
And tolerance would be the verb.
You have tolerance for? That's not, you don't,
no, well,
you don't,
maybe,
you know, tolerate would be the verb, right? You tolerate people?
Tolerate would be the verb, excuse me, yes.
I think tolerance and toleration are pretty much the same thing. I mean, not that we need to have an English class here.
Yeah, one would be maybe an adjective, I guess, or adverb.
All right, well, we'll look that up.
We'll have to look that up.
Anybody, any English majors out there want to help us out? You know our phone number, 978-454-4980. So we mentioned before the break how toleration relates to love of neighbor, because you tolerate people. But I even want to challenge you on that. Isn't there a point where you don't tolerate people and their behaviors?
Oh, well, when you're talking about, when you talked about behavior, the answer is yes, obviously.
Okay.
There's nothing that says that you have to tolerate somebody who's acting like a jerk or with poor social manners. Or
then can you really separate toleration or tolerance for the person and his behavior?
Well, I think it's a process.
Okay.
I mean, if a person says something rude, you know, you might say, okay, the person slipped up or something like that, and you make it known to him somehow that, hey, you just said something rude, please don't do that. And you know, if he persists, then I think the only thing that you can do at that point is probably just to say, well, we're going to have to reduce contact or even cut social contact altogether.
Then wouldn't you then consider that as intolerance towards the person?
Well, you certainly left a door open for repentance. You gave him a second chance. I don't know. I mean, Jesus talks about forgiveness 70 times, and I'm sure the person should probably do that forgiveness, not hold on to any sort of grudge about this person's behavior, but. You know, it's. I don't think there's. You need to tolerate actions that are done that are disrespectful toward you yourself.
Right. So if the philosophical definition of love is to will the good for another,
right,
then what would you say the definition of tolerance is?
Oh, to
allow for?
To allow, yes, to allow for.
To allow for certain imperfections,
yeah.
And sometimes it's much worse than imperfection.
I read an article just before the show, and of course it's about five pages. It's from the venerable Archbishop Fulton Sheen, who wrote in a book. This was really coming from a book. It was the title of this chapter was A Plea for Intolerance.
A plea for intolerance.
Yeah, okay. and he gave a definition, if I recall, about tolerance is forbearance. He used the word forbearance. You forbear,
okay,
you know, certain wrongs done against you, or wrongs done to society, for the sake of that person. I think.
Okay. Isn't there something, maybe it comes from the Bible, suffer fools wisely or something, or suffer fools humbly? I can't remember.
I remember the suffer fools part.
Okay, suffer fools. but it's basically the same idea, that you tolerate certain behaviors for the good of the person, but once those behaviors are no longer for the good of the person, or how does that work with you?
No, I think you're actually going in the right direction there. Everybody does not start off perfect, and I mean, we know that as Christians, we know something about original sin, which says
and imperfection, big time.
And so, yeah, we know that people are going to make mistakes, and we try to help that person out of love to break either destructive behaviors or self-destructive behaviors, so that the person doesn't do it. So there's that sort of tolerance for the sake of that, I think.
Okay, give me an example. Your best friend,
I will actually give you an example from my own life.
Okay, go for it.
I was in the Navy, okay. I learned how to swear like a sailor. And in fact, there was a guy whose nickname included a swear because he said that swear so often.
Yes, the probably the bomb, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And I picked up that habit, and I was saying these swears all the time without even knowing that I was doing this.
Yeah.
Amazing. I was totally unaware that I was swearing all the time, and I went home to my family on leave.
All right.
And my sister took me off to the side and said, you know, you shouldn't talk that way in front of your mother, you know. Believe it or not, that was not the thing that actually turned me around. The thing that turned me around is that I was good friends with this evangelical Christian.
Okay. In the Navy or outside?
In the Navy. Okay. In the Navy.
Yeah.
He was, we were both, I remember exactly where we were. We were standing outside of sonar. He was a sonar tech. And he said, Bob, I really enjoy our friendship together, but I can't continue to maintain this friendship with you swearing all the time.
Yeah, he's straightforward.
He was straightforward, yeah. And I acknowledged that, and I said, you know, I'm going to try to do better.
Mm.
And he accepted that, and the friendship continued.
So he tolerated you.
Yes.
But he was at the point where he could not tolerate that language any longer.
Right.
Okay.
I think it was starting to affect him spiritually, I think, and I think you could understand that.
Yeah.
And he did. I think he gave me the grace to continue the friendship, even though I'm sure that I slipped up many times in front of him.
Of which he was tolerant.
But he didn't tolerate my behavior. He made it known,
yeah,
hey, stop that, you know?
Yes. So then there needs to be two different words here. And it's a shame we only have one. So on the one hand, he does not tolerate you speaking like that. On the other hand, if you slip up once in a while, he does tolerate it.
Right.
So What I'm looking for a principle that would cover this.
I think you look for some sort of repentance from the individual that.
So recognition, awareness, and resolve to not do it again.
Right.
And so that's where you would say, okay, I have tolerance for your behavior if it's in error.
Right.
Okay. And you're trying.
You're trying to stop, you know. And I think that's. I mean, friendship is a sort of love. A lot of people don't realize that friendship is a sort of love these days, I think. But it is. And for he tolerated me as a person. Mm. He didn't tolerate my behavior.
Funny how we're talking about love and toleration on the eve of St. Valentine.
Right. Yeah.
There's a lot of funny memes out there relating to St. Valentine right now.
Yeah.
There usually is this year, right around this time. Want to give an example?
Well, one of them is talking about how St. Valentine's, he was martyred for his faith. Yeah. He was, I don't know all the things that happened, but I guess he was stoned was one of the things.
Right.
And there's these memes on Facebook and on the internet that talk about all these things, and you're celebrating my day with, you know, candies and stuff.
Yeah,
like
one of the cartoon memes that I saw today was St. Valentine, you know, dressed up in the dress of the era at a modern contemporary restaurant, and he was like the waiter, or whoever he was. I don't know if he was the waiter or not, but he comes up to this table on Valentine's Day. Of a man and a woman being romantic with each other, and they had a glass of wine and a box of candy, and, you know, they were talking romantically, and he comes up, and he's holding his head, because St. Valentine was beheaded.
Ah.
That was part of his martyrdom. And he says, I'm glad you are celebrating my day with this, I don't know what he said, romantic stuff or what have you. But the bottom line here is that both St. Valentine and Saint Nicholas and other saints that people have lost touch with the true saints and sort of just go with the legends, they showed a great deal of tolerance and love for neighbor to the point where they gave their lives.
Yes. That is kind of the interesting thing about Christianity, is that the highest principle in Christianity really is love. And you really need to meditate on the crucifix, seeing Jesus on that crucifix. I mean, you have John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he sent his only son. Mm. And that's the real point of this, that despite all the behaviors that you have, all these violations of the commandments of God, which God does not tolerate.
Right, he doesn't tolerate that.
But
yes,
he loves those sinners so much that he offers his son on a cross, who experiences suffering and death for our salvation, for all the sinners.
So he illustrates true love, which brings me to my next question, which it might tie in what you're saying here, and that is, do you think modern secularism today separates love from toleration, or toleration from love?
I'm not even sure if love really enters into it.
That's what I'm saying. Because what you're saying is toleration is at the service of love in its truest meaning.
Yeah.
But if you separate love, and if it's not, doesn't even enter into the purpose of toleration, then what are we tolerating?
Yeah, I think what is happening, especially for progressives, maybe not all progressives, but there's a kind of flattening that's going on. You see it in things like multiculturalism. I went to a talk recently by Anthony Esselin.
Yes.
And he wants to teach Western civilization.
Dr. Esselin from Providence College.
From Providence College. He wants to teach Western civilization. And these people who are advocating multiculturalism are saying, no. And he's actually offering, he's saying, look, we'll talk about Western civilization and we'll talk about other cultures.
Right.
And he doesn't get a response to that. Nobody really takes him up on his offer. It seems to be mostly kind of an anti-Western civilization thing rather than truly being multicultural.
Interesting.
And in the talk, you get the very sense that there in multiculturalism, or even just if we're not even talking about that, there is really no culture to speak of. We've really lost connection with what's happened in the past. So if he talks about Milton or Spencer or Cicero or any of the great Saint Augustine, any of these type of people, and he will get in his freshman class, I'd never heard about those people before.
Yes.
Yeah. So there's a tremendous loss. There's a disconnect between ancient civilizations, not so ancient civilizations, things that have happened in our history in Western civilization that we're completely disconnected from.
A severing of tradition from modern life.
Right. And so I'm not even sure if people understand what they're saying when they talk about tolerance and multiculturalism, because they've got nothing really to kind of make any judgments about whether what you're doing makes sense or is sane. And so what we're actually kind of seeing in a lot of universities is intolerance in the name of tolerance.
Yeah, that is huge, actually, today. One of the ironies of today's left, that the generally the preachers of tolerance are the most intolerant among us.
Yeah, and it actually just seems to go kind of one way, you know. We're supposed to be tolerant of all these foreign cultures. But very intolerant about things about our own culture and traditions. Now, I'm willing to have that argument whether those traditions are wrong or right.
And the parts that are right and the parts that aren't. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem to follow any sort of rhyme or reason for it. Like, I think one of the big things today, and I don't want to speak badly of all Muslims or anything like that, but there are certain things that happen in cultures that where Islam predominates that progressives would never accept in our country. I mean, the way that their cultures treat women, you know, they're treated more like property. If a woman gets raped, there's a good chance that she'll be accused of adultery instead of going after the man who raped her.
Very little tolerance in some cultures in our world today. And I propose that was much more the case back in ancient times than it is today in the modern West. We'll take a look at that after the break and to see how that evolved and why it evolved. You're listening to Beneath the Surface here at WCAP Radio, here till 11. Be right back right after this. We're back. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. You getting tired of that bumper music, Bob?
No, I don't think so.
No? Okay.
It's pretty jumpy and hoppy and stuff.
I was kind of thinking of asking Cindy maybe to give us different bumper music in the middle of the show, but keeping that music for the beginning and the end. No? What do you think? Yeah? I see yes inside the window.
Yeah. If you want to do it, it's your show, Paul. Right.
Well, I don't know. Just thinking, you know, thinking out loud on the air with you.
All right.
All right. Here we go. WCAP Radio, we're beneath the surface.
I'll tolerate that, Paul.
I'm glad you could tolerate that. And I will not tolerate anyone leaving this program before 11 o'clock. How's that?
Okay.
Not much I can do about it, though.
Yes, that is true.
Yes. They can hear me. I can't hear them.
Right. Yeah. You can't hear them slamming the door
or walking away or watching their favorite TV show. All right. So before the break, we talked about how certain cultures today are extremely intolerant of people and their actions. I have a little very loose walking theory about this.
Okay.
Want to hear it?
I want to hear it.
All right. Pre-Christians, generally speaking, hated the sinner and the sin. And hence they were they would tolerate no deviation.
Right.
And so you have the ancient Jews, ancient Islam, as well as some of course, the modern Islam in their cultural revolution, and other ancient societies having absolutely no toleration for any deviation that would hinder what they thought was the tranquility of society or the right order of society. Right. So they would chop your hand off, they will cut your head off, or they will stone you to death, and it's right there in the law.
Here's the interesting thing.
Can I finish my whole...
Oh, I just wanted to do a little introduction.
All right, real quick, go ahead.
About religion.
Yeah.
There was no religious toleration in all these ancient societies. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah. That's true. But in pre-Christian times, that seemed to be the norm. In post-Christian times, we see the exact opposite. That instead of hating the sinner and the sin, you love the sinner... you tolerate both the sinner and the sin.
Yeah.
And with post-Christian times. Mm. And hence, all deviation is tolerated. So we go from the one extreme of no deviation is tolerated to the other extreme with post-Christian secularism.
Yep.
That all deviation is kind of tolerated. And then you have that which, of course, is in the middle, and that's the Christian era, where instead of loving the sinner and the sin, or hating the sinner and the sin, you love the sinner and hate the sin. In fact, you cannot, it's understood in Christian mentality that you cannot truly love the sinner unless you hate his sin, because sin stagnates.
Mm.
Sin brings people down.
Right. While you were talking, I was reminded of...
I knew you weren't listening. What were you thinking of?
I was reminded of this great line that Pope Benedict talked about, or this phrase, the tyranny or the dictatorship of moral relativism.
Yes.
And I think that's what we're seeing now. There's a lot of things people say you can't judge me, you can't judge me in doing that, and so, you know, I subjectively think what I'm doing is not wrong, therefore I'm not doing anything wrong,
right?
And if you believe differently, you're imposing your beliefs upon me.
Correct.
And so we're seeing that sort of thing, and I guess the other thing that you've reminded me here of is you have this discussion with classes about whether they would swerve to hit their pet dog or they would swerve to avoid hitting a person.
Yeah, the dog, you have to hit one, the your dog or the stranger. How would you swerve the wheel? Yeah.
And most people don't answer with their reason. They answer with their emotions.
Right.
Whoever they're more attached to, in this case, the pet,
yeah,
is the person that they would swerve to save.
And your point is?
And my point is that emotions are not an infallible guide to a right or wrong.
Right.
I think we can see it in a kind of a general way. Most people say that the sins that you do are very, very grave and wrong and deserve swift and terrible judgment. And the sins that I do, well, you should really forgive me and be tolerant of those sorts of things.
But do you see what I see? And that there has been a seismic shift in this notion of toleration?
What you're talking about, where there is now intolerance? Is that what you're talking about, the shift?
Well, there's intolerance for deviation in pre-Christian societies, but tolerance for deviation, all deviation in post-Christian.
Yeah, I do see that, but I think we're seeing where that's untenable.
Yes. Yes.
There has to be some sort of intolerance.
And not only that, not only has modern society begun to tolerate virtually everything, unless it's politically incorrect, then they don't tolerate it. But let's just go with the extreme toleration of modern society. They now, and this is really where it's gone off the deep end, they now call it good.
Yeah. Yes.
The evil that they tolerate evolved into good.
Right. Yeah. You can't object to
morally
that.
Acceptable and good.
Right. And so what you see, especially in the, with the case of so-called same-sex marriage.
Okay.
You have this famous case in Oregon where a baker said, "I cannot bake a wedding cake for them," and this baker was telling them that. And I think they were actually the couple, the gay couple, were actually customers for quite some time, and they sold and bought things. Yeah. But when it came to making a wedding cake for them, they said, yeah, "No, you can't." And the state of Oregon fined the bakery, and I think it went out of business eventually. They had a GoFundMe sort of thing going on.
The only thing that isn't tolerated today amongst the left seems to be Christian values.
Right.
Those are the only things not tolerated.
It seems to be that way, yeah.
So these bakers, they believed in their hearts that they would be cooperating with intrinsic evil by decorating and cooperating with the celebration of legalized sodomy by baking this cake and with their little figurines on the cake and saying, you know, whatever the cake said.
Yeah. Yes, but I want to bring up another case. There was a photographer in Arizona. Court case actually reached pretty high. Didn't make it to the Supreme Court, and I don't know if it ever will. But the ruling by the judge who said, you know, you have to photograph a wedding that you think is morally wrong, and that is just the price of your citizenship.
Right.
That was actually, you know, what was written in the ruling, and that is almost a complete turnaround. We talked about earlier, or I wanted to talk about earlier, about religious toleration.
Yeah,
this country actually has a really great history.
History of it.
It comes out of the Protestant Reformation. A lot of people from Europe were coming to the United States, fleeing religious persecution in their home countries. I mean, you had the 30 Years' War in Europe, Protestants fighting Catholics. In England at the time, there was on and off persecution of Catholics and other Protestants, such as the Puritans. The Puritans, they once dominated in England. They fell out of favor, and hence you have the Puritans coming to Massachusetts. So they had all these people suffering this, and just before the American Revolution, there was a couple of preachers that were preaching up and down the coast in America. They were actually kind of preaching a religious toleration and said, you know, we shouldn't be killing ourselves over these differences in doctrine. And so there was kind of an unwritten rule in America, I think, that came from that time. You just don't talk about religion or something like that. And the thing is that actually enshrined in our Constitution is religious tolerance. A lot of people don't
First Amendment.
Huh?
First.
No. I'm talking even before they had the amendments written in.
Oh.
It's so uncontroversial at the time that there's barely anything written about it. But you had the Quakers in Pennsylvania that they had this rule. They refused to swear oaths.
Okay.
And in the Constitution, they said, you know, they got together and said, you know, maybe we shouldn't make it a requirement to swear an oath. And it's right written there, like the presidential oath, "I swear or affirm that I will uphold the Constitution."
Mm.
And that was just a moment of saying, hey, you know,
tolerance.
Yeah. Hey, we're not going to prevent Quakers from becoming presidents of the United States.
So, do you think that same spirit of tolerance for religion exists today in the United States?
I think what's happened, especially you mentioned the First Amendment, I think the First Amendment has turned out to be something that protected religion and is now a club to attack religion.
How did that happen, and when?
Well, it took place kind of deep in history. It wasn't meant... Thomas Jefferson wrote a letter to the Danbury Baptists in Connecticut,
yeah.
And he mentioned the separation of church and state.
Right, wall of separation, yeah.
Yeah, the wall of separation between church and state. What he meant was, the government is not going to interfere with your religion.
Right.
And now people look at it, the wall of separation now means in most people's minds, we need to keep religion out of the public square and government entirely.
Yes.
And in fact, I hear from secular humanists, what the First Amendment means is freedom from religion.
Right.
Even though they'll acknowledge that it says freedom of religious exercise.
Now, the bottom line was that the state basically promised not to create a state religion.
Right.
Period, right?
Period.
They would just get out of the business of religious...
But since the 1950s and the 1960s and yeah. following on, there's always been these objections to prayer in school.
Yeah.
Whether a valedictorian or salutatorian can mention God in their speech, all these sorts of things are coming into play. Recently, I heard... there was a person who was injured at some football game, and people started spontaneously praying, and there was a lawsuit brought against those people because it was, a high school football game.
Yeah, that's really absurd. Some people, to play the devil's advocate, would say that people can pray whenever they want, but... if it's on the public dole, if it has to do with the government, then there should be no prayer at all.
There's practically no federal funds not going to schools everywhere. You have charter schools, public schools.
Right. So they're saying that there shouldn't be any prayer then at school.
Yeah. And it does seem you have the federal government involved sending all this money all over the place, and then they say, okay.
But would you say, though, that it was in the intent of the Founding Fathers, even in that situation, not to disallow prayer?
No.
Because they weren't saying we should disallow religion from the state. We're just saying that there should always be a distinction between state and church because, again, the state, there is no state religion in the United States.
And there's also this sort of thing about what they meant as religion.
Yes.
Nowadays, if you mention God, you're talking about religion, therefore it's forbidden.
Yeah.
But what they were talking about is these various religious denominations.
Exactly. You know how I sum it up to people? This is how I understand the Founding Fathers. They never meant to separate God from the public square or God from state, even though they did want to distinguish church from state. Those are two different things.
Well, it even goes further, I think. There are a lot of people who you'll get into arguments and debates online and offline, and you'll encounter a person who will talk, you'll say... Your opinion is invalid because you're a religious person. Not that you made a religious argument,
yeah,
but that you are a religious person, therefore you're trying to bring your religion and sort of corrupt the United States.
So in other words, you have a particular worldview,
right?
That any ideas that come forth from you are invalid because of your particular worldview. Now, what's interesting I find about that is that the progressive worldview is also a worldview. In a sense, they begin with faith premises about reality, just like Christians, Buddhists, Muslims, or anybody else does.
Right.
But their particular worldview apparently is acceptable.
I think they look at their worldview as neutral ground.
I know.
This is the foundation or basis.
Right, and that's
what's
funny. And
everything else is a deviation from that neutral ground.
And I understand that that's exactly what they think. But it's funny because they can't rise above that thinking to see how wrong that is. That this country was actually grounded. Its foundation is the Judeo-Christian heritage. And taking away that one particular worldview to replace it with another is not bringing it on neutral ground. It's bringing it on other ground.
Right, right. It is kind of funny, as not funny, haha, but funny. What this is crazy. Where the progression seems to be this. You'll have people talking about you need to be tolerant of my speech and my ideas.
Yes.
Until my ideas and speech become the majority or large enough,
and then we'll
that
hit
I have
over
power.
The, then we'll hit you over the head with like a club.
Yeah,
with it.
it will be
the dictatorship of relativism.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Bobbert. I'm very tolerant of your contribution tonight. Hope you enjoyed the show, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for listening to Beneath the Surface. Next week, different topic, different guest, different altogether. Have a great week, everyone, and be tolerant of each other when it is fruitful and right to do so. Take care.
Hello, this is international Catholic singer Anna Nuzzo, inviting you to join me and Father Dan Cambra of the Marian Fathers on a select international tour's Divine Mercy pilgrimage to Poland and the Czech Republic. It takes place in September of 2019, and we would love for you to join us. For more information, go to my website, annanuzzo.com. Thank you, and God bless.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com.